Welcome to PMA Takes on Tech, the podcast that explores the problems, solutions, people, and ideas that are shaping the future of the produce industry. I'm your host, Bonnie Estes, Vice President of Technology for the Produce Marketing Association, and I've spent years in the ag tech sector. So I can attest, it's hard to navigate this ever-changing world in developing and adopting new solutions to industry problems. Thanks for joining us and for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. My goal of the podcast is to outline a problem in the produce industry and then discuss several possible solutions that can be deployed today. This series of PMA Takes on Tech is powered by our sponsor, Sensatech. Sensatech's innovative supply chain solutions help customers retain quality, manage supply chain risks, and reduce costs associated with transporting food shipments around the world. Ensure that you have the visibility you need, when you need it, to increase efficiencies. Learn more about Sensatech's suite of real-time visibility solutions at sensatech.info/PMA. The series is also powered by Driscoll's. Driscoll's is the global market leader of fresh strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, and blackberries. With more than 100 years of farming heritage, Driscoll's is a pioneer of berry flavor, innovation, and the trusted consumer brand of only the finest berries. Today's episode is a rebroadcast of my conversation for PMA's virtual town hall on ag tech investing, where is the smart money going? My guests are Ingrid Fung, an investment director with Finister Ventures, personally located in Toronto. Jacqueline Hurd, founder and CEO of Inco Kim, a crop protection company with a revolutionary approach in the Boston area. And Han Chen, the co-founder and CEO of Zeacal, a plant traits company in San Diego. This is a very unplugged conversation about ag tech and what it was like for an investor and two startups in 2020. These three are very optimistic people, and it's great to hear their vision for ag tech around better business models, better science, and better communication. Let's jump in. I can't tell you how excited I am about this panel today. I've had the opportunity to work with this group before, and I can assure you that you're in for an entertaining, exciting, and different type of conversation. So I'm really looking forward and appreciate the panelists being with us. So Ingrid is going to start us out with an overview of ag tech investing, and then she'll introduce Han and Jacqueline, and we'll take it from there. So I will now turn it over to Ingrid.
My name is Ingrid Fung. I'm an investment director with Finister Ventures, and we are an early stage ag tech investment fund. That means, you know, we invest into startups that have technologies that apply in agriculture. And we've been around in the space investing into early stage ag tech companies at Series A and beyond since 2006. As technology investors, we're really data and information focused. And as part of the work that we do in order to benchmark the investments we make, if they're good decisions or not, we've partnered with PitchBook to really build a database of companies and investments that have happened within the ag tech startup scene over the last 10 years. We've partnered with them to put out reports annually as well to allow the industry to kind of benchmark trends as well as investment flows within the subsectors of our industry. And really what this information has allowed us to do is to look at how ag tech investment has grown over the last 10 years. Suffice it to say, you know, over the last decade, ag tech investment has shown incredible growth, going from, you know, less than 100 million invested annually to about 3.2 billion invested over the first three quarters of 2020. A lot of this growth had to do with generalist investors moving into the space and an increased interest from private equity groups and pension funds to invest in ag with a sustainability lens. Going into 2020 from 2019, we expected to have another banner year. After all, there was about $2.7 billion invested into the sector in 2019. But when COVID hit, we weren't really sure what to expect. To our surprise, COVID had the effect of accelerating investment into ag tech as investors sought to bridge their companies beyond the impact of the pandemic, and consumers became increasingly aware of food supply chain challenges and risks. So, what are investors investing in within our sector, and what are we interested in? Well, investors are attracted to technology companies with great positioning for product market fit. When we take a look at where capital has flowed within ag tech in 2020, we saw that indoor ag captured about 28% of capital deployed within the sector. And we believe this was actually due to a benefit from supply chain risk tailwinds as investors sought to mitigate risks from supply chain disruptions from growers like yourselves that produce produce to bringing production closer to cities. Now, indoor ag companies are still a long way away from becoming the dominant produce producers, but there has been significant capital that's flowed into the sector over the last years. We also saw about 28% of investment into the sector flow into crop protection companies like EncoChem, as investors became a lot more interested in investing in technologies that would allow climate-proofing food production and provide producers with tools to secure food production in a profitable way. And then lastly, we saw a rise in investments into animal technologies, with the sector capturing about 16% of investment into ag tech. And this was because COVID brought an increased awareness of the intertwined nature between animal health and human health in terms of both active molecule management, as well as issues of disease spread and so forth. Now, while overall capital flows into each of these subsegments within ag tech can shift depending on trends and interest, we can all speak to the interest in digital ag earlier on in the decade, as well as the rise in interest in investing in carbon credits and financial tools. Investors are really at the core looking for several key components that we believe make good investments, investments into startups. And that's, you know, startups with unique technologies that are defensible, allowing them to build a moat around their business, startups that create value, and startups that have great product and technology market fit. Now, the first three of these components have always been table stakes, but over the last year or so, it's becoming increasingly important for startups within our sector to have clear communication and positioning around how their technology adds value within farms. We believe that as we move into an increasingly digitized world in the coming decade, clear communication and brand positioning for even the most serious of science and technology startups within ag tech will be key to succeeding. And so today I've brought along two of my portfolio companies, EncoChem and Zcal, who I really believe exemplify these components of being, you know, solid science companies that create value on farm, but have also been incredibly thoughtful and strategic about the way they've positioned their technologies and how they're going to be communicating their technology value, not only to producers, but to consumers alike. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Jacqueline Hurd, CEO of EncoChem, to introduce herself and tell you a little bit about her company.
Thanks, Ingrid. Great introduction. And so I'm Jacqueline Hurd, and as Scott had mentioned, I guess if you use one word to describe me, it would be entrepreneur. I started my career as an entrepreneur, and now I'm ending it as a CEO of a startup company called EncoChem. So in between the two startups, I actually had a 12-year career in big ag. So I worked at Monsanto Company, and from everything from leading R&D programs to doing venture capital investing. So again, always finding a niche to get to that innovative sort of entrepreneurial spot with within the organizations that I've worked. So it's about 3.5 years ago, I founded EncoChem when I was a venture partner with Antara Capital. And the company really was focused on addressing some of the biggest needs in agriculture today, which is having safe and sustainable solutions for growers around the world to protect their crops and their yield from pests and disease. And we are taking a slightly different approach that hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about more, which is we're using a human health paradigm and bringing that to crop health. And so we can talk about what that means, but we're using a novel set of, we're using a target-based approach and a novel set of tools to get to differentiated products for the global market.
Thank you everyone for having us on board today. My name is Han Chen. I'm the CEO and co-founder of ZCal. My story is one of serendipity. I never thought I would be in agriculture, and even our entire technology journey is one of, I'll say, very fortunate accidents that ultimately led us to discover a new trait technology called PhotoSeed, which changes the photosynthetic capacity of plants. And if we all rewind a little bit to our high school biology, what that means is we're letting some of the key crops in the world, we're improving their ability to capture sunlight and CO2 to make better yields, more nutrition, and obviously improve their sustainability index. We started with our roots in New Zealand and California, thus the name ZCal. And our original focus was in perennial ryegrass, a crop that many of us here in North America haven't heard of. But over time, as we saw this great platform technology evolve and its applications across so many different crops, we ultimately migrated the technology here to the US, and we're focused on soybeans. And that's our flagship product. And in soybeans, we're trying to use that enhanced photosynthetic capacity to improve the nutritional density. And with our last round of investment, we're now also broadening out into other crops, including rice, hemp, and obviously with our continued efforts in forages in New Zealand.
Great. Thank you guys for those introductions. Like I mentioned, I've had the opportunity to work with Han and Jacqueline quite a bit specifically and watch their companies grow and have watched their careers. And so it's really fun to have them on the virtual town hall and talk to them about their journeys. So kind of looking at COVID, and it's been hard for a lot of startups that I've talked to during this last year, not being able to go out and talk to people. I mean, most investors say, you know, we want to spend this amount of time with a management team before we would ever invest in them in person. And so it's been kind of a struggle for some companies that weren't out there to kind of raise money and keep going. And so it's amazing to see that Jacqueline closed a $45 million round of funding during COVID. So if you could tell us a little bit about that, Jacqueline, and what that magic was, I appreciate it.
Yeah, we can chalk that one up to an experience. But actually, you know, so we started raising our funds. Well, first, let me just tell you that the number one role of a startup CEO is to raise operating capital. And so you're constantly trying to look for ways to raise funds so that you can support, you know, the operations of your company so that you can continue to drive value for investors. And so, you know, you raise funds and then you manage your stakeholders and your investors. But it's very much a relationship process, right? It's all about your network and the relationships that you build. So, you know, as Ingrid said, at the beginning of 2020, it was a challenging environment. I think a lot of investors sort of were hunkering down and saying, well, we've got to really focus on providing the support that our current portfolio might need in case there's liquidity or cash availability issues that arise as a result of the pandemic. And so, you know, we started raising in the fall, so before that period of time. And I would say, you know, if there's any learning that I had from actually getting to our close in the summertime was that, you know, it started off tough, but then things started opening up where Zoom was actually a huge, you know, benefit to actually getting meetings on the calendar to tell your story, to give your pitch. And so that was fantastic. But the one issue that I did notice was that, you know, you need time to do diligence and to really build a relationship with your potential investor. When you think about it, this company, any investor is going to be a part of your company and have a close relationship with you for years and years. And so it's really, you know, so essential to make sure you have that rapport, you have that relationship, and that you have the time to build it. And so that's where I felt like COVID was a little bit, it was challenging to meet in person and to build some of those relationships. But like with Ingrid, it was wonderful because we had a chance to do a lot of the diligence before the shutdown happened. And so I would say that you know, there it ended up being fine for IncoChem, and we were feel very fortunate to have raised, you know, the $45 million, and you know, just in terms of agriculture, it was a great year. You know, it was a great year for generalist investors to come into the space. So I feel very encouraged by the future for ag tech.
Great, thanks. Han, you had closed a round in 2019, so the rush wasn't as much on you to do something in 2020, but you spent your time looking at your business model and communication strategies during COVID. And I encourage to go to the Zeocal website. I love what you've done and how you're presenting the company and how you're presenting the solutions. And it's really great. So I think a lot of what Ingrid was talking about of really being big, good communicators around science and science products, I think you've done a great job of that. So what was it like to kind of continue your operations and then make some of these business changes during COVID? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so 2020 was definitely, I would say, the year where my expectations were the exact opposite of what they were going to the New Year's. I remember January 1st, I said 2019 was such a great year. It was one of those breakthrough years for Zeocal. Our team was growing. We signed two major partnerships, closed the investment, and 2020 was going to be that upward trajectory as well. And then COVID hit. And very quickly, I remember spending February and March seeing which of our operations were shutting down and saying, well, how many milestones do I need to adjust now? And I remember thinking, gosh, how am I going to tell my investors that we're now at beginning 50% capacity? Ooh, maybe now it's 70% capacity. And how do we manage those expectations? And I remember the best that I could do at the beginning was saying, well, everyone's in this boat, so maybe it's not that bad. But then around April and May, and this was one silver lining, I would say, of COVID, is CEOs and startups, we rarely get quiet time. We rarely get a time to kind of pull back and actually analyze, you know, our business and what we really believe in and what we're doing. And it's because of that constant, you know, pressure to deliver, that constant need for focus. And without travel, without the conferences, without constantly putting ourselves out there, we kind of stepped back and we said, well, what is it that we have and what is it that we're really trying to solve? And to Jacqueline's point, I had a number of great Zoom meetings. It felt like, you know, the so-called gatekeepers and those key holders kind of went away. People were more willing to have honest, transparent, and really authentic conversations about what they wanted, you know, who they were. And there's nothing like seeing someone's dog or kid run through and photobomb a Zoom call in order, you know, to have that kind of connection in real time. And that led us down this journey of actually broadening beyond, you know, what we were focused on as a seed genetics company and speaking to end users, speaking to the supply chain about how has COVID impacted you? And how do you feel about innovation in the space? What are your priorities? And surprisingly, when we had that conversation and we learned so much stuff that we don't really talk about publicly, the Zeocal experience and our focus right now primarily on the major row crops, you know, we started seeing that there's a lot of, I would say, disconnects in the value chain. And those disconnects were leading us to kind of come to the conclusion that maybe in addition to innovating great science, we had to innovate a better business model and in turn communicate those two things at the same time. And Bonnie, that's where you know, you're saying with the rebranding. For the first time as a science company, we felt like we could actually build a brand, a message that could go all the way through to the consumer around science that was really at the front end of something at the genetic side. And that's really been our COVID journey and kind of our, I would say, repositioning and recreation of who we are.
Thanks. So Ingrid, you talked about building better business models and better science and improved communications as things that you look for to invest in. And that's really important in your portfolio. And is that something that's specific to Finisterre? Do you think that's, you know, a branded Finisterre thing or do you think that all ag tech investors are starting to think more that way?
I think, you know, recently with the increase in food tech investment and some of the really, really headline numbers that are coming through from really what are food ingredients companies that are creating a consumer brand, there's been an increased awareness across the agri-food investment value chain around the importance of branding. And I think, you know, I wouldn't say this is a unique Finisterre thing. It's something that we have pushed our portfolio companies to do quite a bit, especially over the last year when, you know, a digital presence has been more important than ever. I would say, you know, as an investor, Finisterre really focuses on technology first. You know, we're a very technically trained team. I'm a molecular biologist by training. One of our managing partners is a geneticist by training. We want really, really good science. But the flip side to where we've seen, you know, the challenge of science adoption has been really around the communications piece. And this is where I think, you know, at Finisterre, we focused a little bit more on in the last year in encouraging our companies that while small, can build a really strong digital presence where they can punch above their weight compared to a lot of the corporates out there. I remember chatting to one of my girlfriends at the beginning of the pandemic when everything hit and, you know, looking through the Twitter accounts of all of the major ag chem and seed companies, and they had a really fragmented presence. The branding wasn't aligned. And we realized at that point that our portfolio companies really could capitalize on this digital presence piece and this kind of captive audience that we'll have during the pandemic to really make a presence and a brand for themselves that they otherwise may not have the opportunity to do. So I would say, you know, while at Finisterre, we've always pushed our portfolio companies to communicate, market, and so forth, more than ever over the last year, we focused on that clarity of messaging, brand positioning, and clear science communication piece.
And on that note, you know, it's because of Ingrid's actual introduction to Canopy Rivers, that's how we got our 2019 investment. And I often talk about this, but we always look for investors that bring more than capital. And I would say that one of the strongest assets that came out of that Canopy investment was I got to meet a much younger team that was very much focused on marketing and branding in a highly regulated sector, right? And I realized that all those lessons could translate into agriculture. If you like the way our website and our materials look, you know, I got to thank Alessandra, you know, from Canopy Rivers, who handles all this. And we had none of that at the beginning. We didn't have an Instagram. I was barely on Twitter, somewhat on LinkedIn. But I realized that we're doing great things, but we weren't talking about it. And I think that's the biggest weakness in ag is we often win over the minds of people, but we rarely win over the hearts of people. And when we don't do that, it allows this kind of vacuum to exist. And unfortunately, what fills that vacuum is often misinformation. And so one of the things that we just never thought about in the early parts of our journey is, do we need to communicate anything other than data? We always said the data speaks for itself. Data rarely ever speaks for itself. You really need to have someone get it to a point where it's honest, it's accurate, but it's also accessible and meaningful to the people that need to interpret it. Until that happens, you know, startups will be in a very limited space about how we can make impact and make a difference.
So how is that different messaging being received? What kind of feedback are you getting and who's reacting to it?
I've been pretty surprised, to be honest, Vani, because we always thought that the startup message when we got out there would kind of be like a little drop in a very big ocean. And what we've been really surprised about, even among very large players throughout the supply chain, is, wow, this is refreshing. We have actually not heard of a seed genetics company that is trying to use genetics to understand how we can make this better for processors, how we can make this better for end users, and then in turn, how can we create something that's relatable and important for consumers, because they say that bean goes into one part of supply chain. We have no idea what happens afterwards. And at the end of the day, they call themselves kind of a silent majority. You know, they said, we might be some of the largest customers and consumers, but we have no power or say over how this innovation happens. I don't think it's malicious. I don't think it's intentional, but it is a series of unintended consequences that's emerged from an agriculture system that's prioritized volume, that's prioritized efficiency and scale, that hasn't really stopped to say, well, why are we doing this? Who are we doing this for? And do we even need to communicate why we do this? So I would say that, you know, with our messaging and our kind of ability to go in there, and our tagline is carbon to nutrition. We want to capture more carbon to meet the needs of environmental sustainability and, you know, produce more oil, more protein, healthier foods. And that is something that's really resonated, because right now that's not a message that's getting out there, at least among changing the fundamentals of biology.
So Jacqueline, you say that you use drug discovery technology for crop inputs. What does that mean, and how are people responding to that message? It certainly falls into the better science category, and love to see that happening, but maybe you could talk a little bit about kind of what that means and how people respond to it.
Sure. So really, for decades, the agriculture industry has used the same tools to solve increasingly urgent problems and more difficult problems. And as a result, you know, these R&D methods are really proving to be too slow and too costly to deliver what consumers and farmers need. And so as a result, the pipelines are stagnant. But if you look at the healthcare industry over that same time period, you know, they're using a target-based approach and a modern toolkit of AI and computational biology to solve, you know, the increasing challenges for disease treatment. And so if you take, for example, cancer drugs, if you look at them a decade ago, where they would, you know, non-specifically target any growing cell in the body, versus now they can be very specifically targeted. I mean, it's just been a revolution. And so we're trying to take the advances that pharma has made in designing these very selective molecules to the crop health space. And so that's what we mean by applying healthcare and drug technologies to agriculture. What we do is we really zero in on solutions to very specific challenges, whether it's a fungal disease or a resistant weed. And then we specifically design molecules that will effectively target and target the control of those pests without harming humans or other species in the environment. And so we've really proven out our technology pipeline can deliver. And so we have a really diverse pipeline of molecules that we think will be game changing in agriculture. So, you know, I think in terms of how it's being perceived, I think small molecules for healthcare, they're very well accepted by consumers. I mean, I take a drug every day, a small molecule every day for thyroid. And so people, I see the result. I know how important it is. But when you think about food production, it's very difficult for consumers to sort of understand. Well, they're very removed, actually, from what happens to grow the food to what they actually see on the grocery store shelves. And so, you know, we really see pest resistance challenges and growers really face some huge problems today. And so we're trying to communicate this idea of using these really novel, innovative technologies to bring better, safer solutions to agriculture. And so far, the reception has been welcome. We just came out of stealth mode in June. And so we are just starting on this journey of branding. But, you know, like Han said, transparency is going to be essential. We recognize that consumers are key stakeholders of us, even though our customers are going to be growers. And so this is, you know, we see sort of this role of a small startup bringing this awareness and technology to this industry and seeing the improvements and the impacts it can have on sustainable agriculture.
That's a very different way of talking about crop protection and crop inputs. And I think as people think about that, they think about what I take and what I put in my body to take care of myself that's very specific, that's made very specific and targeted to what's happening in my body. And you think about, you know, that's what you're doing, you know, with your crop as well. And so I think that is a great way to communicate that. So switching to supply chain, there's been a lot of focus on the supply chain in the past year, especially in the produce industry. We've had our share of issues. And it's clear that innovation is needed to create new and different supply chains in all parts of ag. So Han, this has been something you've focused on, and you talk about harmonizing the supply chain. What do you mean by that? And can you give some examples?
Sure. So as I mentioned earlier, you know, our major focus is on the major row crops. But when we were reinventing the business model, we actually borrowed a lot of lessons, you know, from the organic sector, as well as high value produce like berries, you know, fruits and nuts, et cetera. Because in these high value sectors, you can't get away with being anonymous. Your brand is on that product. Even though it is a supply chain, ultimately what you grow in the field ends up in the hands of a consumer that would then judge you based on your nutrition, your taste, your appearance. And in the major row crops, I feel like we've let opaqueness and anonymity become a shield for doing things the way they are and kind of this race to the bottom mentality. And I'll kind of give this example. When you look at what an end user of soybean wants, they want oil and protein. That's what soybeans are grown for. When you talk to a processor, you know, they'll tell you, well, I want the best margins from taking that bean and make it into those components. And then when you go to the farmer and then you go to the seed innovators, they only get paid on yield. So between what an end user actually wants and needs and what the growers are actually being paid on, it's completely disconnected and different. And so when I mentioned earlier that there's a lot of unintended consequences, everyone has said, oh, you can't create a value added trait. You can't create a technology that's based around an identity preservation at a scale that's meaningful. Yes, we have high oleic soybeans. You know, yes, we have an organic market, but these are still relatively small compared to the overall size. So that was, again, one of the first things where we said, well, why is that assumption necessarily true? You know, why do we have to continue to race to the bottom where we keep producing more and more yield? But that yield, you know, and what people don't talk about is that comes at the expense of quality and nutrition. I spoke with a large end user who said that his rations of soybeans went from somewhere from 20% a few years ago down to 10% and now declining. And the reason is because the quality has dropped year on year per bean. Because as we breed for so-called yield, what we're really putting in there are more carbohydrates and so-called filler material. I've heard soybeans this year be called styrofoam. I've heard it be called empty calories, little black holes. And what do? They're looking for alternatives. They're moving towards other crops. They're moving towards corn DDGS, synthetic amino acids. And that's all fine, but who does it ultimately hurt though? You know, when this supply chain is a race to the bottom, who ultimately, you know, bears the cost of this? Well, it's who we all care about. We all say we care about the farmer and the grower, but that is the group that's ultimately bearing this cost. They're the ones that ultimately say, as this crop value decreases, we're going to see long-term challenges. And yes, we have boom bust cycles where this year it's a great commodity crop season, but let's not forget the past 8 years where, you know, soybeans was at $8-$9 a bushel. So how can we actually increase the margin of farmers? How can we actually increase the value that they create, diversify their incomes, and actually connect that grower to that end user? And that has to be a reinventing of the supply chain. And one of the investment theses that we're challenging right now is a startup better at reinventing a supply chain, or does it come from the majors? And I think this is a, you know, something that Jacqueline and I have talked about over the years. I'm sure, Jacqueline, you remember when I was sitting, you know, when you're still at Monsanto saying, well, do these large companies, do these large ag companies behave like pharma? Are they going to integrate new innovations in this pipeline and kind of feed the beast, if you will? And we don't really see that in agriculture. And I think a lot of the issues are, is that agriculture is laden with legacy assets, fixed infrastructure, possibly outdated business models. And so one of the things that we're thinking about right now is, do we partner and who do we partner with? And what parts do we need to recreate, given the fact that we're a startup, given the fact that we're, you know, a blank slate, and we might be able to recreate some of this. So at Zeekal right now, what we want to do is have an end user that can value the higher nutrition sustainability index, you know, build that integrated supply chain and get the grower paid on metrics other than yield that can then increase that resiliency of the supply chain and the food supply in the long term.
So Ingrid, in what you're looking at in small companies versus large companies, I mean, do you see that the large companies are going to make more innovations, or do you think more innovation is going to come from smaller companies?
I think there's a balance. I certainly see, you know, large companies continuing to invest in their innovation pipelines. But, you know, even from the conversations I've had with R&D leaders, you know, at the large ag chem corporates, at the large companies, they do say that there is an inherent culture within each company. They have, you know, their focus on the way they've done things. You know, for ag chem companies, that's high throughput screening. It's they've invested in a lot of infrastructure in terms of talent, in terms of, you know, equipment to be very good at this one thing. And it makes it very difficult for them to shift and pivot and look at novel ways of innovating. So I think we're going to continue to see innovations coming out of the ag corporates, but the truly kind of unique and different approaches are going to come from startups. And I think, you know, when we think about business model innovation, these large companies can try, and some of them have tried, you know, for example, with, you know, premium cotton products, integrate that through to the consumer through, you know, gene brands and so forth. But they're not very good at it. And it costs them a lot in-house to run these things, right? And so I think it's going to be a balance. We're going to see, what I hope to see ideally is, you know, startups like Zeekal innovating on the business model and the technology front, and then, you know, large corporates following suit or acquiring. But I think it's going to have to come from both. And really the model that Anko has, I think, is quite interesting. They both partner with the large companies to work with them, as well as develop molecules on their own to build value within their company. And I think it's going to be this double-pronged approach that will win in the end.
Yeah, I really agree with that, if we want to take this any further, because I see a huge role for startups as serving as disruptors of the supply chain. And without those challenges, I think it would be more difficult for the large companies, you know, to innovate. And so, you know, our role is to really look at the agriculture 10 years from now. What does it look like? What could it look like? And then bring technologies that service that future. And so that's the exciting thing about, you know, it's a little scary, but it's also, you know, a really exciting thing about being a startup. And so, you know, in the input space, I think we're pretty unusual in that we're a small company trying to bring innovation to something that has traditionally been held with the ag R&D majors. But we think that the, you know, the situation has been, you know, provided to us in a way in that there's so much resistance that's developed, and the speed of innovation and the pipelines today is inefficient. It's not going to deliver on what's needed. And so there's an opportunity to really think about things differently. We're not developing things that have to work with a trait, for instance, in row crop agriculture. We can drive selectivity with the molecules that we deliver. And that gives all farmers globally the opportunity to have solutions for their pest and disease problems on farm. And I should highlight too that you know, we see eye to eye with the Gates Foundation. So the Gates Foundation led our Series B, and we partnered with them to deploy our technologies to underserved markets. And that's a critical component of the, you know, the supply chain today has driven these inequities, that not all farmers have access to technology. And so for us, the partnership with the Gates makes a ton of sense and will allow us to bring our technologies, you know, to global markets, including underserved markets, at a reasonable cost. And so we're very excited about that partnership.
I mean, Jacqueline, you make a great point, which is about, you know, access to innovation, but also just the nimbleness of innovation. And I wonder, one of the things that we feel is that startups, despite not having the same resources, the same scale, you know, size, and look, I visited a lot of the large company facilities. It's like Christmas every time I go. I'm like, I wish I had that machine. I wish I had those 10 benches, you know. But the reality is that we're also innovating without any of those, you know, constraints. And I think EncoChem is a great example of lower cost, nimble innovation. And that's something that Zcal has always prided itself on as well. And for us, you know, any acre that we get on is a win. That's one acre we didn't have before. Whereas large companies have a lot to lose. And every time they see a new idea, it's, this is exciting, but if I get 1% of the market, it's incremental at best, and it might be cannibalizing what I have. So why do this at all? And I see those ships not being to change direction very fast. And as they get bigger and bigger with consolidation, probably not at all. So do you feel like, you know, startups, there's kind of an asymmetric advantage here, you know, as we're able to target smaller markets, more localized, and this whole theme of, you know, COVID with resiliency going more local, that if we take that all the way back to the innovation space, that there's actually competitive advantage there.
So looking forward, I'd like to hear from each of you what you think, how things are going to play out in 2021. Where will investment go? Will investment go up or down? And what do you see for your companies? Ingrid, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually quite excited about 2021. I think that, you know, we're the shock of, you know, all this disruption that came with COVID has passed a little bit. We are all kind of hitting our stride in terms of figuring out how to make investments, how to look at companies. And you're starting to see companies come back around to, you know, one, seek investment, and two, establish new partnerships. I think it's going to be a pretty interesting world to be in this world of Zoom, where, you know, as Hans spoke to, a lot of the gatekeepers have gone away. You can get a lot more meetings with people. You can have a lot more conversations. Yes, it is more work, but it is certainly worth, you know, digging into. Investment wise, you know, I'm still very bullish and excited about crop protection. I think, you know, we spoke briefly in our prep call about technology flows. I think there's a lot of technology flow from pharma that can be leveraged to do really interesting small molecule discovery with a sustainability and safety lens put at the forefront. I think, you know, any company that looks at sustainability, not just environmentally, but economic sustainability for growers, as well as equitable access, will, you know, start to succeed and define themselves differently. And so, you know, very excited about, you know, plant sciences, crop protection, and as well, animal health. We're starting to see a lot more companies pop up in the animal health space, trying to be strategic, trying to push for better stewardship around small molecule active management in mammalian health in general, because, you know, human health and animal health are linked. So those are the three buckets that I think we'll continue to see a lot of investment and a lot of useful innovation flow out of.
Jacqueline, how about you? What do you think the year is going to be like?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good year for ag, but I'm always optimistic. I've spent my whole career in ag. I've got to think it has promise. So yeah, absolutely. I don't think ag is going anywhere. It's the oldest human technology on the planet. So I think it's definitely here to stay. And I see a lot of interest in generalist investors coming to agriculture. So that's positive. And I also think that COVID really was something that revealed some of the vulnerabilities that we have in our supply chain. And so I think that those, you know, that revelation has provided opportunities and a clear, you know, target for focused capital. So.
And Han?
Well, I mean, so far, 2021, unfortunately, it feels like a bleed through of 2020. So I would say personally, my goal is to create more barriers between my personal life and my professional life, because it literally feels like, I grew up with that, exactly. Because literally you're in my guest bedroom and everything just flows through from one to the other. So that's a personal goal. But that being said, you know, we spent a year, like I said, in this meditative state, really trying to have clear minds and open ears, listening to what industry really wants, listening to what the needs of the supply chain are. And our ambitions have become a lot larger. Before, we just wanted to create the best science. I think right now we're trying to create better business models. So we've launched two major initiatives, our carbon to nutrition, the idea that, you know, plants are photosynthetic monsters. They eat carbon for lunch. Let's have them eat a little bit more with PhotoSeed. And we're really pioneering a new type of agriculture. And our new type model is based on this idea that we want pillars of sustainability. And sustainability is about resource sustainability. So obviously, you know, the inputs, the environment, but we can't forget about the major resource and the most important one in agriculture, which is the people. You know, the people that grow the crops, we have to make sure that their incomes, their mental health, their appreciation by society, that all of these things are sustainable. And that requires bringing the grower closer to the end user, letting the end user embrace the innovation that we're producing, acknowledging, you know, the sacrifices, the hard work that these growers, you know, do every day, getting up way earlier than I would to plant the crops that we need to feed the world. So, you know, we just announced a partnership with Grow Alliance yesterday. That gave us access to a network of growers and seed producers across 8 states in the Midwest. And we're building the supply chain piece by piece from the ground up with no preconceived notions. And, you know, we want to see, you know, other people come to the table and say, we can do better. You know, we can, and we will. And it's not going to take a lot of resources. I think Jacqueline and I hopefully have proven that point today, that the limitation is not capital. It's culture, it's willingness, and it's courage.
That's it for this episode of PMA Takes on Tech. Thanks for allowing us to serve as your guide to the new world of produce and technology. Be sure to check out all our episodes at pma.com and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, and I would love to get any comments or suggestions of what you might want me to take on. For now, stay safe, eat your fruits and vegetables, and we will see you next time.